most busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
Distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today. It's Monday, April 30th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org to get involved today. We've got a great show for you here today. We've got a brand new interview we cut this morning with Dr. Robert Malamede of the University of Colorado at Colorado Springs. Dr. Bob is one of the world's leading cannabinoid researchers, and he joins us today to talk about marijuana potency, among other things. And also here today, we got some music from Mikey Dread. He's got a brand new album released this April on the Dread at the Controls label. That album is called Life is a Stage. We love Mikey Dread here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Some great stuff found at the Independent Online Distribution Alliance. All week this week, we're going to be featuring music and interviews dealing with the global marijuana marches happening next weekend on May the 5th. It's a great opportunity for everybody to get involved, and it's usually a great outpouring of support in a number of cities across the country. We'll have interviews from the East Coast, the West Coast, and everywhere in between highlighting those marches. But first up here on the Audio Stash today, we have news from Normal. Our news today. FBI says marijuana was planted on 92-year-old Atlanta police shooting victim. Documents have been released this week into the shooting death of 92-year-old Katherine Johnston in her Atlanta home last November. The documents show that city narcotics officers planted marijuana on a street informant to force a search of the home, as well as planting marijuana in Johnston's home after killing her. Two of the officers involved in the shooting have already taken plea agreements and pled guilty to felony murder and other charges. One was sentenced to 10 years in federal prison, the other to 12 years, 7 months, with both agreeing to cooperate with the ongoing investigation. The new documents show that the officers threatened a street informant into indicating that the Johnston home was used for narcotics sale by first planting marijuana on the informant. The narcotics team then secured a controversial no-knock search warrant from a magistrate judge, using the intimidated informant and other false information. Within an hour of the warrant being issued, the officers were prying off the bars on Johnston's windows and using a battering ram to open her front door. Johnston, likely thinking she was being robbed in the rough Atlanta neighborhood, prepared to defend herself with an antiquated .38 caliber revolver. Johnston fired one shot that struck the porch roof, and the officers responded with a hail of 39 bullets. Five or six of the officers' bullets struck the elderly woman, with the fatal shot entering her chest. The newly released documents come from the FBI investigation into the shooting, which brought national outrage and strong calls for finding responsibility from Atlanta's mayor and the governor of Georgia, both of whom asked the FBI to handle the investigation. The details of the day Johnston was killed is a dark and disturbing insight into the practices of the Atlanta narcotics team. After fabricating all of the right answers to secure their search warrant and then gunning down Johnston, they handcuffed Johnston as she lay mortally wounded but still alive on the floor. The squad then found no drugs in her house. The officers then took marijuana that they had found earlier that day from the trunk of their car and planted it in Johnston's home. The FBI documents show that the officers took great pains to keep their stories straight and cover up the events. But on December 11th, one of the officers relented and presented the truth to the FBI investigative team. Community leaders in Atlanta have loudly decried the Johnston shooting, but also indicate that the police tactics used in the case seem to be the status quo for narcotics enforcement in their experience. In the wake of the shooting, the use of no-knock warrants must now be approved by police supervisors as well as a magistrate judge. Particularly chilling in the Johnston case is that the narcotics police felt that just a few small baggies of marijuana would be enough to justify their killing of an innocent elderly woman. The tragic case only further highlights the need to completely make legal and regulate marijuana so that law enforcement are not required to consider marijuana along with truly dangerous drugs as they seek to police high-crime areas. Full coverage of the Johnston case is available through various media resources and archived at Map Inc. We have links at normalaudiostash.com. Next up on the program today, we got some great music for you from Mikey Dread. This is going to be a perfect prelude into our potency interview with Dr. Robert Malamede coming up for you after this music. Here's Mikey Dread off his brand new album. It's called Life is a Stage. It's on the Dread at the Controls label. We have links to the album and the label up on our website at normalaudiostash.com. Here's Mikey Dread with Pound of Weed. Have you ever smoked upon a tiki weed?
me love the weed. Yes, because the real girl is give me love the weed. Yes, me love him bone ganja, give me love the weed. And because the real girl is
That was Mikey Dread here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash with that track, Pound of Weed. He's on the Dread at the Controls label. That's off his brand new album, Life is a Stage. You can link up to the album and the label on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. That Mikey Dread's a great prelude into this interview. Joining us today to talk more about pot potency. It's one of the world's leading cannabinoid and endocannabinoid researchers, Dr. Robert Malamede from the University of Colorado at Colorado Springs. We featured a past interview with Dr. Bob in last week's Audio Stash. We got the chance to catch up with him this morning from his Colorado Springs office. We have links to Dr. Bob's homepage, and he has his own podcast. Check it out. I have links to that, all that on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. Dr. Bob, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
Howdy, my pleasure to be here.
It's great to speak with you again, Doctor. We're going to talk about pot potency here on the Audio Stash today. We're seeing this resurgence in totally outrageous and frankly idiotic reefer madness from the UK and even US drug warriors on this issue. They say that marijuana is much more potent than it was in the 60s, but didn't they used to test a lot of hemp, a lot of ditchweed that was seized in the past?
Well, a lot of what's confiscated by the government in terms of the plants that they rip up has historically been ditchweed. There was a study done a number of years ago where they showed that something like 98% or something high, very high 90s number of the plants that are uprooted in this country are ditchweed. So, you know, that's of course going to bias their statistics down a little bit. The question we might ask is, why are they spending millions of dollars to rip up ditchweed?
Indeed, indeed. And, you know, they also found that the highest THC levels were found in Oregon marijuana, where there are a number of absolutely wonderful cultivators. But I have to ask, I know we've touched on this in the past, but is marijuana really that more potent even than in the 60s? I mean, was there always some high THC marijuana available?
Well, I remember back when I was, you know, a lot younger than I am now, we had things like Panama Gold, you know, Panama Red and Acapulco Gold, and they were quite a surprise when you first toked up on those. But I can distinctly remember what we did. We rolled little teeny thin pin joints when we had that, compared to the, you know, the kind of trashy brick Colombian that we were smoking for the most part back then. So I think there's a history of having available high quality, high potency marijuana. It's just that I think because of the, essentially because of the drug war and the crackdown that has occurred, focused largely on marijuana, they've driven people indoors, that's promoted cultivation, and it's allowed people to select all these various strains that are available today, which include strains with increased potency. So it's kind of like the law of unintended consequences once again. You know, they tightened up on illegal imports, and they fostered a domestic market that had talent and desire to produce better marijuana. So once again, the narrow-minded people have kind of screwed themselves with respect to their narrow-minded aims.
You mentioned something interesting there that Paul Armentano stated in the Normal press release last week, ended in his interview here on The Stash, that cannabis consumers self-regulate their intake and really don't go too far. And that seems like a unique thing to marijuana users, unlike alcohol, where folks can drink themselves dead at a party in one night.
Well, I think unlike things like cocaine, for example, where people tend to become kind of like fiends, you know, every 10 minutes or 15 minutes they want more, and it really becomes kind of a pathological drive. You don't see that with marijuana for the most part. I mean, of course, there are going to be some people who are gluttons and abuse it, but that's not the majority of the people out there consuming. So, you know, it's very much of a different situation. I think real insight is gained from looking at an animal study where they gave mice low doses. And this is a critical thing. So much of the research, even still done today, is done with doses that are way beyond what I would consider reasonable for a person who gets high. And when I'm saying this, I'm talking about using synthetics in either animals or in tissue culture models in an effort to learn more about the multiple effects that cannabinoids have on our bodies. But the point is, there was a study done a number of years ago where they gave animals very low doses, and they allowed them to self-administer. And basically, what you know, if you translate, you know, how much they were taking per weight of a mouse to a human, it comes down to they like to take a couple of hits.
Now, we're really talking about recreational smokers here, but medical users can sometimes be using much more marijuana than recreational smokers.
Not just THC, though. It's the constellation of cannabinoids that produce a variety of synergistic effects. You know, one of the important factors that's often neglected is that there are about over 60 cannabinoid active chemicals in marijuana that have a whole variety of effects that kind of meld together to produce the effect that you get from smoking marijuana, which is quite distinct from what happens if you eat a THC pill, which the government has decided is a safe, effective thing for people to use. You know, they made it a class 3.
Let's talk about that for a moment, Bob. John Walters, the drug czar, and Nora Volko of the National Institutes on Drug Abuse, they would have us believe that 10% THC is somehow really dangerous. But Marinol is 100% THC, and it's FDA approved.
Well, and there's a lot of factors to consider there. Most people who are consuming marijuana recreationally are smoking it, or at least in many cases are moving more to things that are healthier, like vaporizers. But the key factor from both of those routes of entry is that you can self-titrate, because the effects occur at a fairly, you know, over a fairly short period of time, so that you can see where you're at. And you, people, I mean, how many times have you people said, no, I'm all right, you know, people are passing joints and somebody reaches the point that they want to, you know, I'm okay, and they don't take anymore. So that's kind of the norm. People, just like those mice, like to get a certain level of altered consciousness, which, you know, what does it really mean, getting high? It means you're relaxed, you're open-minded, you're extra sensitive to sensations and feelings. You know, a lot of positive things. It's actually like turning on your life more, because you're relaxed and able to feel and think and experience yourself. So if you take too much, you tend to not be able to do that, because you tend to become immobile. I mean, see, that's the thing, again, about eating it versus smoking it. You smoke it, you self-titrate, and I think the dangers come in, especially for novices who are maybe, you know, eating it for the first time, and they eat too much. And the same can be said to be true of people smoking high-potency marijuana when they're using it for the first time, and they don't understand that you don't just go and smoke a joint. You know, you smoke to reach a certain level, and a lot of times, which is actually quite interesting, people who are novices, they smoke and they don't feel anything. So they keep smoking more, and they don't feel anything, and they keep smoking more, and they don't feel anything, and all of a sudden that little window opens up, and they say, whoa, you know, and by that time it might be too late. So, you know, if the government really cared about the individuals of our society, in particular the youth of our society, rather than making them into criminals, we should have educational programs to teach people how to use marijuana constructively and effectively, and especially for first-time users, so that they don't take too much and you know, receive uncomfortable effects. And considering uncomfortable effects, that takes us back again to Marinol. Marinol being pure THC, it lacks some of the counterbalancing effects that you find within the plant. For example, CBD, cannabidiol, is what's known as anxiolytic. It breaks anxiety. Whereas straight THC is anxiogenic, meaning it makes anxiety. So if you're smoking the plant as opposed to taking that pill, you not only can titrate your dose, but you're going to have something that counters a lot of the negative effects of straight THC. And the pathetic situation is that here we have sick people, you know, suffering from cancer and other illnesses, and the government has approved a drug from them that's going to make them anxious, just what they need, and not allow them to self-titrate so that they're going to tend to take too much.
And we've mentioned this a few times, that cannabis consumers really do look for a certain level of intoxication, then stop their smoking session when they reach that point. But is there anything to say that higher THC marijuana actually makes people like pot more?
No, I think if anything, it might make them like it less, because once people have an unpleasant experience with anything, they tend to not go back to doing it. So if you give somebody a dose that makes them uncomfortable and unhappy and, you know, feeling insecure and anxious and whatever, they're not going to tend to use it. So If anything, I would think that it might have the opposite effect.
And for, you know, for teenagers in particular, you know, they're being sent to treatment, usually because they're given the option in front of a judge, you know, go to treatment or go to jail. But, you know, for teenagers who do want to stop using marijuana, do they need medical treatment? I mean, is the sort of traditional treatment used for, say, alcoholics something that would be successful with a marijuana user?
Well, there's two things we should look at here. One is that people who use marijuana, for the most part, stop using it. I mean, we know the numbers. You know, how many people use it when they're young and stop using it when they have less time and less, you know, a more controlled life. They have jobs, they have families, etc. The bulk of people who use marijuana early stop using it. Well, if it was a dangerous, addictive drug, they would not be able to do that. So, I mean, the data there clearly dispels that rumor. On the other hand, there are people with addictive natures for anything. You know, there are people who drink 10 bottles of Coca-Cola a day, clearly something harmful and not healthy. And there are similar people who sit around and smoke joints all day and do nothing, just like in the advertisements that the government puts out in the ads. But that's the minority of people. You know, I know so many contributing members of society, family members, professionals with wonderful jobs and, you know, demanding jobs, and they love to consume because it's an intellectual way of altering your consciousness. It's not like drinking alcohol and becoming an idiot.
So, and, you know, and is 15 or 20% THC in marijuana, is that as high as it gets? Or can we get even higher THC levels?
Well, I think the highest that they've recorded has been something like 28% or something up there, close to 30.
Wow.
But, you know, there's a limit because, of course, the plant has to live, which means it can't, you know, you can't just turn the plant into 100% THC because it needs to be alive, which means it has to be doing all the other things necessary for life. Kind of true of people, too. You know, if somebody sits and smokes all the time and does nothing else with their life, they're not alive.
We're with Dr. Robert Malamede of the University of Colorado at Colorado Springs, one of the world's leading cannabinoid and endocannabinoid researchers. Bob, no one involved seriously in marijuana law reform or marijuana science will say that pot is 100% harmless for everybody. THC is certainly a non-toxic substance, but in the interest of setting a good example for the thoughtless, blind-to-science opposition out there, there is a small subset of people who may experience some detriment to smoking marijuana, is that right?
In an effort to be fair, unlike the other side, which is blindly obsessed with their dogma, cannabis is not good for everyone. You know, there are people who are predisposed to schizophrenia, and I think there's pretty good evidence that pot can help foster that in that subpopulation. So, you know, if there's a kid with a history of a family history of schizophrenia, they probably shouldn't have it. And if things like that were more readily known and people were more educated in the constructive, safe use of cannabis instead of the fear-mongering, we'd probably, in general, have a lot less problems and a lot more people benefiting from it. You have to remember that cannabis literally works everywhere in our body because we have this endocannabinoid system. And in general, what our endocannabinoids are doing is they're kind of regulating our body balance, homeostasis. And they're regulating a lot of things in our brain. And what has been found in schizophrenics is that they have extraordinarily high levels of some of these endocannabinoids in their blood when they're having schizophrenic episodes. So there may be quite a direct link to the kind of imbalance that these people have that could be further augmented by cannabis consumption in a way unique and different from other drugs to some extent, because it turns out that other drugs like alcohol, like heroin, like tobacco, they funnel through the cannabinoid pathways in our brain. So it's a very complicated situation. It's far from being all sorted out because we know so little about the nature of consciousness and, you know, what's really going on in the little worlds that we look out of our minds from.
And to be clear here, folks, there are only about 1.5 million Americans who are thought to suffer some type of schizophrenic brain disorder out there, while over 4.5 million Americans are living with Alzheimer's, and THC in particular has been shown to possibly be a revolutionary treatment for that disease.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, see, that's again the thing, this weighing off. What we've done is we, as meaning the government, I shouldn't include me in that, but what our government has done is they've focused on the few things that they can justifiably at least quote some science on now, because you know, the science has come out so overwhelmingly, in many cases, in a way suggesting that there's benefits to using cannabis. So what they do is they focus on the negative things, like this association with schizophrenia, also like potential impairment of reproductive function, because it's absolutely true. The female uterus, for example, makes loads of endocannabinoids, and they're turned down at the point of ovulation because they have to be low in order for the fertilized egg to implant in the uterus. If it's high, implantation cannot happen. So clearly there's an association there, a clear scientific link with why a woman who's trying to get pregnant should not consume large quantities of marijuana. In addition, there's comparable studies showing that the development of the sperm and its maturation and the ability to join with the egg is also regulated by endocannabinoids. And when I say regulated, I mean that we have to have enough, but we don't want to have too much in both of these cases. So there is certainly a potential association with reproductive behavior. You know, that's true. But and those are the only things that the government tends to look at. You know, they used to tell us how bad smoking was, but now, and it is bad. I mean, but it doesn't cause lung cancer. It causes emphysema and other respiratory illnesses, but it doesn't cause lung cancer. So they can't keep peddling the argument, oh, there's five times more carcinogens in marijuana than tobacco, even if that were completely true, which was not because of the nature of what they studied when they did that you know, when they came to that conclusion. Again, there is a fundamental difference between tobacco smoke and marijuana smoke in that tobacco smoke unambiguously causes lung cancer, and marijuana smoke, if it does so at a dramatically reduced rate. And in fact, recent studies are showing that marijuana kills lung cancer cells. You know, a lot of cancers are directly killed by cannabis. And this is something that a lot of people are very excited about because they're looking to develop new cancer therapies based on cannabinoids. Well, there's some real interesting stuff in the works regarding that. I'm actually fortunate enough to be a founder of a company that resulted from a very brilliant friend of mine and the ideas that she developed. You know, cancer cells and all of our cells, anything requires energy to live. And it turns out that there are ways that we can modulate the energy use patterns, which happens to be different in cancer cells from normal cells, so we can basically block their energy access in a way that's going to provide a revolutionary treatments for cancer.
Bob, this has been fascinating, and I can't wait to speak with you again to talk about that work that you're doing. We're out of time here today. I want to give you a big thank you. Many thanks for joining us here today to talk about this.
My pleasure.
Thank you again, Bob. Dr. Robert Malamede is a professor of biology at the University of Colorado at Colorado Springs. He's one of the world's leading cannabinoid and endocannabinoid researchers. We have links to Dr. Bob's homepage as well as his own podcast, Dr. Bob's Cannabuzz. Links to those are available on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. We'll be covering the pot potency issue further this week, right here on your first source for good marijuana information, Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow.
Of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. and over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and coworkers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
The podcasting technology of NORML is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.